And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really excited to be sitting opposite Russ Johnson, one of the finest musicians here in southeastern Wisconsin and a fine music educator as well. He is the director of jazz studies at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. I don't think he'll mind me mentioning that he also teaches trumpet at Carthage, where I'm on the music faculty. So I get to see at least the passing glimpse of Russ Johnson as he's hurtling down the hallway. And I'm always excited when we can sit down with him to talk about an event that I know lots and lots of people look forward to year after year, UW Parkside's Jazz Week. And it is coming up next week, March 11th through the 15th. And there is an interesting array of artists who are coming in to perform. And several of the performances are absolutely free and open to the public. And we'll be talking about the headliner of March 14th and the really special and exciting way in which Parkside's Jazz Week finishes up on Friday the 15th. So, Russ Johnson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure.
Glad we can have this conversation. So remind me, how long have you been at UW Parkside?
I started in January of 2010. I was a mid-year replacement for Tim Bell, who was a legendary musician and educator in the area and is deeply missed. Mm-hmm. So Tim, I think his accountant told him he needed to retire immediately and not get to the next calendar year. So I started in January of 2010, and I commuted from New York for a year and a half. And then, and I was in a lecturer position, and then I applied for a tenure track position, and so then I started that in 2012.
Great.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, was there something called the Jazz Week before you even came to Parkside, or is that something that you created?
It's something that I created, and it's something I'm extremely proud of. I honestly can't remember if we're in year 10 or 11. I believe it's number 11. It's something that the experiences that I remember of hearing incredible musicians are what really inspired me to want to be a great musician. Right? So it's that. And I remember I grew up in Racine, and I remember going to Horlick High School to hear the great jazz trumpeter Clark Terry when I was in like eighth grade. And I remember going to that concert. I still remember going to that concert. And I was like, wow, that's cool. And then a couple of years later, I was like, no, that's what I want to do. So, I mean, hearing live music and one of the things that I love most about Jazz Week is on the concerts Monday through Wednesday, we do a Q&A with the artists afterwards, which is oftentimes, being an educator, the most impactful part of the performance. I mean, it's amazing for our students and the general populace to experience these incredible musicians, but then to hear them talk about their art, I think, is really, really powerful. Both for like I said, for the general public and especially for our students.
Yeah. We'll get to this lineup of artists in just a moment. We're going to be kind of toggling back and forth between that story and your story, which we've explored before, but I think we'll explore it in a couple of different ways. You just mentioned that you grew up in Racine and obviously were a musician from very early on and a trumpeter from very early on. At what point and for what particular reason did jazz begin to be such an important part of your musical energy?
Well, there was my brother played the trumpet, and he was in the jazz. He was 5 years older than me, and he was in the jazz band in junior high and high school when I was and he's the one that basically when I was in fifth grade, he's like, you're going to play the trumpet, and he was a lot bigger than me and very physically imposing, and so I said, I guess I'm going to play the trumpet.
Okay.
But he had some records. He had a couple of records. Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, which is the best-selling jazz record of all time, and some records from the mid-70s, a Chick Corea record, a Brecker Brothers record. And he also had Miles Davis' Sketches of Spain. So I heard those. And then when I was 15 or 16, I went to a jazz camp led by an incredibly important educator named Jamie Abersold, who was legendary. And that was like, it was a week long, 4 or 5 day long camp. And that's where I got hooked. Mm. And I've told this story before, and I was incredibly fortunate to have this masterful drummer, Adam Nussbaum, at Parkside a couple years ago. But I was in the record store, this gigantic, you know, in the basement of this whatever college we were at in Normal, Illinois. Anyway, and this famous drummer was there, and he was like, "Hey, kid, what do you play?" And I was like, "I play the trumpet." And he was like, "You have to have these four records." Ah. And they were Miles Davis records from the mid-50s, and with his first great quintet, with John Coltrane, Red Garland, Paul Chambers, and Philly Joe Jones. And he said, "You have to have these four records." And so I bought those four records, two record sets back in the day. And I got home, and then that was it. I put those records on, and it sounded like Miles Davis was speaking to me personally.
Wow.
Like I could hear, like specifically on those records, the sound of his playing with the harmonium is just, I mean, I get chills thinking about it now. And so that's really where and that was the moment where I was like, I want to do that. I don't know what that is, but I want to do that.
Right. And at that moment, you probably couldn't do that either.
So I still can't do what he did. but no, I couldn't. No, I mean, growing up in Racine, Kenosha, the music programs, they're still very strong, but they were incredibly strong when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. And so there were some people that were into the music, but it wasn't like it was, you know, everybody was into it.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, like those records were my pathway.
Yeah. I'm just curious, at that point in time when, in a sense, jazz trumpet and more kind of normal classical trumpet, if we want to call it that, were both a part of your life. I'm just curious how different those two things felt to you, and that when you weren't playing jazz, when you were playing in other styles, did you feel like, I don't know, you know, an eagle with its wings clipped or something? I mean, was there something kind of boxed in about that other kind of playing versus jazz?
I wouldn't say boxed in. I would put it the opposite way, that jazz allowed more freedom.
Right? Well, that's what I mean.
You mean. But it's like, the boxed in thing, like I'm 58 years old. I practice classical trumpet technique every day.
Ah.
Every day.
Wow.
Playing the trumpet is playing the trumpet regardless of genre.
Right.
Right? To play the instrument well. In order to be a great artist in any genre, you have to be a virtuoso on your instrument. So, there was never a point where I was like, I'm done with classical music. I'm playing with the UW Parkside and community band tomorrow night, Thursday.
Yeah.
I'm playing tonight with the wind ensemble, where we're playing a classical piece. So it was more like my focus just kind of was grabbed by jazz. And there's creativity in every music, right? But jazz allows you perhaps to be a little more personal. Right. If I'm playing in an orchestra, I'm expected to sound a certain way and to execute things a certain way. Now, if the conductor is really great, they want your personality, right? Chicago Symphony without Bud Herseth would not have sounded like the Chicago Symphony, right?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, there is personality, but you know, when I fell in love with jazz, it was never a point where I was like, oh, I'm done with that other music. It's just my focus shifted.
Right.
And I still listen to classical music, and I love classical music. 20th century classical music, late 19th, but 20th century classical music, and current musics. And I still perform usually contemporary, like literature, when I'm playing classical music. I always put it this way, like if I can fool 90% of the population, but if there were a group of classical trumpet players in the room, 10 notes in, they go, "Jazz guy," right? But to the general populace, I can you know, fake it till I make it. I feel like I play the instrument well, and it's like I said, I still perform classical music.
Yeah.
But it was just this thing where the jazz thing, the personalities of the musicians, and then that desire for me to try and express whatever it is that I have to say.
Right. So it sounds like for you, jazz is where, as a musician, you feel the most at home.
For sure.
And maybe your gifts fold into that world maybe more effortlessly or more naturally than the other. I guess I'm reminded of a name that a whole lot of people know, Wynton Marsalis, mm-hmm. who for a while in the early part of his career recorded both. I have all kinds of Wynton Marsalis on my shelves here. And then at some point, he, as far as I know, really shut the door on his classical playing, you know, has not recorded or publicly performed classical for quite some time. He really had to, you know, chose to focus pretty much exclusively on jazz. And I guess I've never explored what was behind that choice, but always kind of assumed that he found the two maybe in some ways to be incompatible, or the one to focus on both was a detriment to the thing that maybe you love the most.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know his specific reasoning either, but he was and is, I'm sure, an unbelievably great classical trumpet player, right? Those recordings are some of the most important recordings of classical trumpet playing in the last 30 years, 40 years. And he was extremely great at it. I don't know what was behind the shift. I mean, once he became artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center, that was basically created by him and funded by him.
Right.
I think that, and that's just pure conjecture
sure.
on my part. But
well,
I'm guessing that may have been where it was like, okay, I have, you know, I'm now fulfilling this role. And he grew up in New Orleans, and his father's a famous jazz pianist
sure.
and stuff like that, and brother's a famous saxophonist, also a great classical saxophonist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would never want to speak for anyone else. That's just purely a guess. But, yeah, I don't know if people that don't play the instrument understand is that articulation is completely different between the two.
Mm.
They're polar opposites. So articulation means how you get the notes to sound and how they're produced, and then how you play consecutive notes.
Right.
And they are literally completely backwards.
Mm.
So, and that's one of the reasons that I had to focus on most of my attention on playing jazz, was because the articulation aspect of it is the real challenge.
Mm.
And that's why a classical musician, if they were listening to me, would be able to identify that I'm a jazz guy.
Yeah.
I have a sound that I think would be passable for a classical musician. I understand the idea of the phrasing and all the ornamentation
sure.
and stuff like that, but it's really this one very small but huge important part of the playing, which is really their articulation.
Interesting.
As an educator and as a trumpet teacher, I make all of my students learn to produce a very strong classical single tongue. If you're going to play, you know, and now if you want a career in music, you need to be able to do everything.
Sure,
right?
Of course.
So, I mean, a lot of incredible classical players or jazz players end up playing Broadway shows and things
mm-hmm.
like that. You have to have both.
Yeah.
Right? So that classical articulation thing is incredibly important.
And I'm glad we actually talked about this more than I thought we would, but I'm glad we did, because I think this kind of means also that, you know, when we encounter any trumpeter, and this goes for probably other instruments as well, and we see them play such and such, and then we see them play such and such in these two different worlds, that's not something we should take for granted. That is impressive. I mean, it's two skill sets in a sense.
It is two skill sets.
And it's worth appreciating.
Thank you.
The student and the teacher who guided them such. For those of you just joining us, I'm talking today with Russ Johnson, who is director of jazz studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and the creator of Parkside's Jazz Week, which is coming up next week. And you said it earlier, this is roughly a decade or so that this has been in existence?
Yeah, and it started out, it's something that I wanted to do when I got here. I just, I, I, and you know, funding is always an issue.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I think the importance of seeing as well as hearing, and seeing live music as well as hearing is extremely important. If you want to be a great musician in any style or genre, you need to be exposed to great performers. Mm.
And I remember from us talking before that, at least to some extent, some of the people you have brought to Parkside for Jazz Week have been musicians that you know personally. I mean, because you have collaborated with them. You have been musical partners, if you will. And that has to be really exciting, too, that this is, in many respects, kind of an outgrowth of your rich life as a jazz trumpeter yourself.
It is, and I feel very fortunate, and I get to call in favors, you know, and you know, some of the artists that I'm able to bring in would typically not perform for the fees that we're able to pay them, but if they are on the road, and that's where it you know, my experience with these musicians helps. If they're on the road, I know, you know, and people reach out to me too. They're like a lot of people, and they reach out and say, "Hey, we're going to be on the road," and I'm like, "Well, if you could do it in the first week of March, I can give you a Monday night gig or a Tuesday night gig."
Yeah,
like the artist we have coming in on Monday night he travels all over the globe all year round. And it's one of those things where I was like, okay, I can give you a Monday or Tuesday night with a fee that's pretty good, but maybe not what you need. But if that's part of a tour, then they're happy to come in and do it. And then they don't have an off night and they're not paying for hotels.
Right.
You know. Exactly. So it's, you know, in many cases I get to see old friends. Mm-hmm. But they're also world-class musicians.
Right. Yeah. Well, and good people, too. I mean, because we've talked about that before, that you know, there are certainly some great musicians in the world that you don't necessarily want interacting with your own students just because they're kind of maybe reprehensible human beings or who knows what. But, I mean, you really try to bring in people who are going to be exemplary musicians and role models and all of that that's tied up in making this meaningful for your students.
100%. And I mean, we've had, I won't name names, we've had one artist in particular that was at Jazz Week that I would never, ever work with ever again. Right? I wouldn't do it. Because they were not those positive things that you described.
Yeah, right.
Right? And it is important. It is important. And that's what I think is so special about what we do as far as the Q&A with the artists afterwards. Our students get to interact. And again, everybody's welcome. This is not just for Parkside students. Everybody, please come.
Right.
It's, you know, people get to ask questions of these incredible artists in a setting where it's really relaxed, you know, and it's amazing to me because some of the questions are very technical and musical, and many of them are the exact opposite. Like, how do you survive in this business? It becomes like a business thing,
sure,
too, which is extremely important for young musicians,
right?
Right? How do I make a living doing this? I want to make my living doing this. How do I do it? And they get to say to any of these artists, like, well, all right, so what do you do? And they will lay out their game plan of how they've done it and how they think it needs to be done next.
Right.
Because that's always shifting.
And of course, right, I was just going to say, and it's 2024. And so these are people who are jazz artists right now in the present day and dealing with the realities of this particular landscape, which includes post-COVID and, you know, other realities, inflation and so on. And so, they can speak with a real immediacy and currency, I suppose.
And I always, always, always have at least one artist on and during the week that is young.
Ah.
I always want to get somebody, you know, book somebody. In this case, this year, it's Emily. Christian's fairly young, too. But Emily Kuhn, who's on performing on Wednesday night. Like, I make a point of getting somebody young on this Jazz Week every year because I want them to be able to speak to what is happening right now. And this is how I navigate 2024. Mm. And this is how I book a tour, or this is how I manage to, you know, whatever. I'm playing at the Blackhawks game on Wednesday night. I'm playing at Jazz Week on Thursday night. I'm doing this on Friday night, you know. So it's important to me to bring in at least one, you know, artist in their 20s every year to talk directly to my students who are late teens, early 20s.
Wow, that's great. Well, let's talk about who's coming in, and why not? Let's talk first about Emily.
Okay.
We don't need to go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
But she is a jazz trumpeter, mm-hmm. and quite young. I mean, mm-hmm. incomparable age to a lot of your students, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little more about her, and then we'll listen to a little of her playing.
She's... we actually just played a couple of nights ago together in a big band in Chicago. She has an unbelievably beautiful trumpet sound, and is one of the things that I love about her playing is I feel there's with many players I feel like I can hear all of their practicing coming out in their playing.
Ah.
And with Emily, music pours out. Sometimes, especially in 2024, we're expected to be such virtuosos on our instrument that we display it on every time. And I really love musicians who I feel like who touch me in a way, right? Whose music reaches someplace inside. And Emily, I think, is an incredibly thoughtful player, composes really fantastic music. She has an amazing band of young musicians in Chicago, and I think is an important voice. Mm. I think is really an important voice, and super cool, and you know,
yeah,
awesome person as well.
Great. This is a piece of hers, a composition of hers called "Ghosts of Us," that really caught my ear. So that's what I chose to bring today to play. And this is again Emily Kuhn, who's going to be playing on Wednesday night, March 13th. So. Here's a little sample of her and her bandmates in something called Ghosts of Us. Thank you. soulful playing of Emily Kuhn. She's going to be the artist next Wednesday night, March 13th, as part of UW Parkside's Jazz Week. And her performance is free and open to the public. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD, and we're talking about UW Parkside's Jazz Week, which is next week, with Russ Johnson, who is Director of Jazz Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, the creator of Jazz Week and the person responsible for bringing in this wonderful array of artists. You were saying that there's somebody else that's relatively young as an artist coming in, and I think that's your bass soloist coming in on Tuesday night, March 12th, Christian Dillingham.
Yes.
Tell us about him.
Well, we were discussing earlier people that cross over into both worlds of the classical and jazz worlds. Christian is definitely one of those. He is, I mean, you know, he subs in the Chicago Symphony. He's in the Lyric Opera and stuff like that. He's a serious classical bassist.
Wow.
Who happens to be an incredible jazz bassist and composer as well. So he is one of these people that can do both on a level where, you know, and yeah, he is extremely successful. So, we mentioned earlier, I came back here in 2012, and I've been able to work and play a lot in Chicago. And Christian is one of the musicians that I met, and he has everything you could ever want in a bass player or in a musician, for that matter. He's got an incredible sound. He's got incredible time. He's got incredible harmonic sense. He's a world-class musician, and he teaches. He's the bass professor at Indiana University.
Oh,
but you know, he basically commutes there from Chicago. Lives in Chicago with his family, and is an incredible composer as well. And that's something that I think, as a younger musician, and actually all the musicians that I bring in. Today, it's a requirement that you pretty much have to be a composer to have a career in this music.
Okay.
In the past, you would play what are known as standards, Tin Pan Alley, Broadway show tunes, things like that. But in the current era, you pretty much have to be a composer as well. And Christian is a tremendous composer. He just recorded his second album, but his first album only came out, I'm just throwing this out there, a year and a half ago, and it's on a label called Greenleaf out of New York, which is run by a trumpeter named Dave Douglas, and it's a very respected label. So he's one of these people who's, you would say, their star is on the rise. I don't know how old Christian is. I'm guessing late 30s. So he's not a kid, but he's also not an old veteran either.
Not using a walker yet.
Yes, so. He's not using a walker yet. But again, amazing, and it has an amazing band. His saxophonist is Leonard Simpson, who was originally from Milwaukee. And Leonard is incredible, and is he's blowing up into a jazz superstar. And I actually had Leonard's band at Parkside either last year or the year before. So Christian's band is filled with some Greg Archery on drums and Dave Miller on guitar in addition. And these are, among Chicago's most creative and incredible musicians.
Yeah. I listened to several things by Christian, and one of the things I was struck by is that, you'd kind of think that somebody who's a string bassist who's composing would be composing things in which it's all about the bass. And I was really struck piece after piece how the bass is just part of the fabric of the whole thing, and I just thought that was really cool. Kind of I would call him maybe a generous composer, writing as much for his bandmates as he is for his own instrument.
And that is completely admirable, and I think hopefully becoming more and more commonplace. Right? I think, and that maybe is just my perspective, but I feel like. Well, maybe it's the artists who I love who have that aesthetic, right? It's, and I mean this in the best possible way, you're there to serve the music rather than to show how brilliant you are.
Right.
Right? And I think that really comes across. I think that was a very astute observation. It really comes across in Christian's music. I never feel like it's about him. It's about, here's my music.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So rather than a show of virtuosity, which he most certainly is, a virtuosic bass player, it's about, I want to present my music.
Right.
And again, it comes back to the composition thing we were talking about.
Sure.
Earlier.
Yeah. This is a piece of his called Undulation. So here it is, written by and performed by bassist Christian Dillingham and his band. Christian Dillingham and a piece of his called Undulation that I really, really like. He is one of the guest artists for Parkside's Jazz Week. Next week, he's performing on Tuesday night. And I guess I'm assuming that all of these are in the beautiful Francis Bedford Hall. That's where the performances take place. And Tuesday night is also a free performance for the general public. Jazz Week kicks off with saxophonist Tim Byrne, B-E-R-N-E, Tim Byrne. And this is an artist where we're going to be taken into some really interesting directions because of the kind of improvisatory performing that he does. Just tell us a little bit about him and we'll get a little sample then.
Well, it's very accurate. And I think he's one of the important musicians in any genre of the last 25, 30 years. And it was hearing his band was a life-changing experience for me. I've been a fan for a long time. In the very late 90s, I was living in New York, and I went to hear one of his bands, a band called Blood Count. And I was always somebody that was, up until this point, somebody who was interested in some, what you might say is left-of-center music or whatever, that wasn't, I grew up playing what we would call straight-ahead jazz. And I heard this music, and I developed an interest. I was working with some musicians in New York. There was a scene called the downtown scene, which was, you know, uptown and downtown were two. Uptown was more of a straight-ahead scene. Downtown was more of an avant-garde scene, or however you want to label it, free jazz scene. And I went to hear Tim's band, and they were doing they're playing a club called the Knitting Factory, and they played five nights in the old office of the Knitting Factory. And I went 4 of the 5 nights. And the first night I was like, okay, this is interesting. And the second night I was like, huh. And the reason it was so interesting to me, and by the fourth night, and the one night I didn't go, it was because I had a gig, so I couldn't go. And by the time that week was done, hearing that band 4 of 5 nights, my life had changed.
Mm.
It was one of those moments that I didn't realize music could be like that. And this
wow.
idea of, and he's a brilliant composer. And a lot of his, so he writes these incredibly intricate compositions, incredibly intricate. And the improvisation sections oftentimes are completely improvised. But the thing that was so fascinating to me is I had no idea when the composition ended and when the improvisation began. And
wow.
that was a whatever light bulb moment or an epiphany to me where it was like, I don't know what's coming next.
Wow.
And so Tim's music has had a huge impact on me and many musicians. And he's now 70, which is hard to believe.
Wow.
And he's out on the road all the time. I mean, this is the second day of a tour that he's doing that's, I think, like 10 days, going to the West Coast like tomorrow and doing all the, and literally, and then going to Europe for, you know, for 2 weeks after that. Tim is on the road all the time, internationally recognized. This music is very different than Christian's music or Emily's music. And it's something that one of my goals, as an educator, is to expose my students and the population to different types of jazz. And a lot of people don't even like that term, jazz. But but Tim's music is very different, and I absolutely love it. And like I said, like hearing his band was a life-changing moment for me.
Wow.
It's something that it changed my direction of what I wanted to do musically. It was just like, I had no idea you could do that. And so, yeah, I mean, it was, so, I mean, to bring him here it's a fantastic moment for
right.
me. And, yeah.
Personally, yeah.
Yeah.
He kicks things off on Monday night, the 11th. And this is part of a track from actually an album that only after the fact did I realize this is 20 years old or so, an album he made in Denmark and Sweden called The Skill Game. So here's how that interesting album opens. There's something incredibly fearless and fresh about this music. This is Tim Byrne. Tim Byrne and his trio will kick off Parkside's Jazz Week on Monday evening, the 11th of March. We've talked about Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We need to talk about Thursday night when the Orrin Evans Trio takes the stage. Tell us why you're so excited about them.
Well, Orrin is one of the great pianists of this or any generation. Mm-hmm. He's, he is a masterful musician. He knows the history of the music incredibly well and is very forward-thinking in his approach. So he's assimilated, the vast history of this music and come out with his own spin on it and take on it, and I think he's absolutely brilliant. And to me, you can hear the entire history of the music in Orrin's playing. He's one of the most in-demand pianists of today. I teach with him every year at a jazz camp in Connecticut, the Litchfield Jazz Camp. So I've known Orrin for a long time. We played together. Chicago does amazing job supporting the arts. And in the summer, they don't have it anymore, but they had a series, I think it was called Made in Chicago, and the great drummer Dana Hall put a project together playing the music of jazz composer Andrew Hill and flew Orrin in. Orrin lives in Philadelphia. He's from Philadelphia, but lived in New York for many years. And he flew Orrin in. I believe that's where we first met. And so I've had a chance to play with Orrin quite a bit. And he's again, I think one of the most masterful musicians on any instrument playing today. And again, also an incredible human being and truly inspiring mentor to young musicians. And his trio is going to feature Robert Hurst on bass, who was, we talked about Wynton Marsalis, and Bob Hurst was the original bassist in Wynton's group. And Mark Whitfield, great young drummer. And it's kind of classic jazz piano trio.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is something called The Red Door, and we'll hear just a little bit of it. And this is the Orrin Evans Trio. I really hate to pot that down. The Red Door with the Orrin Evans Trio. He is headlining Thursday evening, March 14th. This is one of two performances in which there is an admission charge, a ridiculously modest admission charge. I mean, this is a lot less money than you would pay in any kind of standard venue to see an artist of the stature of Orrin Evans. The Jazz Week at Parkside, again, which is next week, finishes out on Friday the 15th. First of all, with a noontime concert of the jazz faculty, and that should be a lot of fun. And then, speaking of fun, 7 p.m. should be really, really exciting. Explain who takes the stage to bring this all to a close.
Well, on that Friday, it's basically Parkside plus local guests. So the noon concert, as you mentioned, is the Parkside faculty, and we bring local high schools on campus to spend the day with us, basically. So they'll be there for the faculty concert, and then we have master classes for each of the specific instrument groups. And we will have this year Tremper, Bradford, and Walden High School from Racine, Walden 3. So they'll be our special guests. So we, and then I work with the bands in the afternoon. They spend the day. They can do tours. We provide them pizza and salad and food. And then we do the concert with the three local schools, high schools, and the Parkside Jazz Ensemble on Friday evening.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's super fun.
Yeah.
Super fun.
No kidding. No kidding. So, again, Jazz Week at UW Parkside kicks off on Monday evening, March 11th. And there are performances each night of the week, culminating in this joint performance with musicians at Parkside, plus Tremper, Bradford, and Walden High School. And if people want tickets for Thursday night and or Friday night, should they get those tickets ahead of time, and if so, how?
I would recommend it. You can, if you go to Parkside's website, basically uwp.edu, and you punch in the keyword jazz, Jazz Week will come up, and there's a link to the tickets there.
Okay.
And $10 to hear Orrin Evans Trio is as you said earlier, ridiculously
right.
inexpensive to hear world-class music.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. For sure. And the whole week shapes up to be a really exciting musical adventure for everybody who comes to partake of it. So, and at the helm, Russ Johnson. Russ Johnson, it's always wonderful to talk with you. Such a pleasure, start to finish, and we hope a lot of people will take in all of the offerings of Jazz Week 2024 at Parkside. And thanks for being my morning show guest today.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure. And I hope to see many of you at Parkside this week.